You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the GSA yields. Biden's transition becomes official. Meanwhile, a thoroughly defeated Donald Trump still insists he has a chance. Not dead yet. Sorry. As COVID surges, so does holiday travel, sadly. And Janet Yellen, your new Treasury Secretary, John Kerry, your first climate czar, Dianne Feinstein to step down from the Judiciary Committee leadership, Biden filling out at least part of his cabinet at this point with establishment picks. David Dinkins, New York City's first and only black mayor, rest in peace at age 93. Meanwhile, in New York State, Democrats secure veto-proof majority in its legislature. This is going to have big implications for progressive legislation that hopefully will be modeled in New York. The Fifth Circuit rules that Texas and Louisiana, however, can cut off Medicaid funding for abortion. Trump continues to burrow extremists into our government civil service. And the leader of the Breonna Taylor protest shot and killed. No details yet. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Join me today, as most days, is Emma Viglin. Hello, Emma. How are you?
I'm good, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm getting excited about the Thanksgiving break, as it were. Take a couple of days off first since essentially Labor Day, I guess. We have obviously had an election, and it is nice that it's finally wrapped up for all intents and purposes. I mean, Donald Trump is still on his
tour. There's still a chance.
I may be dating myself, but in the Monty Python's Holy Grail, I keep thinking of that of the knight who has no arms and no legs,
right.
And he's still.
I'll bite you to death. Is that
exactly?
It?
Yes,
yeah, there
that
we
one.
Go.
Well,
see?
I guess there you go.
Not that dated.
That's not, apparently not. But he's still claiming, he sort of like did I didn't really lose, but we're going to go forward with the transition. And that is going to be hugely important for a number of reasons. Obviously, national security, you want there to be some continuity. There's only so much that can happen domestically because you need, we won't know really in terms of what can genuinely happen domestically until we find out what happens in Georgia in many respects. However, what can happen, at least in terms of like what the executive branch can do, is to begin to construct logistics for the distribution of vaccines, which will come online in some of the instances, very possibly, by the end of December. And of course, not huge amounts, but amounts that we're going to go, I would imagine, directly to
frontline workers,
high-risk
exactly. Individuals. Yeah, I mean, I think I heard on the news that they're going to start distributing the vaccine for frontline workers and other essential workers in New Jersey by, I think, a little over 100,000 by the end of December, mid to late December, which is extremely significant.
Yes. And as there's a lot of obviously logistics involved in just getting them to frontline workers. In some respects, it may be even more difficult because you're trying to target specific people. Now, I would imagine what's going to happen is the states are going to be heavily involved in that. But as you start to talk about how you're going to get these vaccines widely distributed, how you're going to pay for it,
how are you going to pay for it, huh?
You know, who's going to pay for it and, right. and whatnot. But the logistics are the big deal here. And apparently, you know, that is what you're going to see a tremendous amount of work on that front, obviously, because the sooner the vaccines can be distributed and of course, manufactured as well. The U.S. government has already provided a significant amount of money to these companies for the production of these vaccines. In fact, I believe the production's probably already going on now. And part of that was the idea being, you know, we can waste some money if these vaccines turn out to be not so great. But we will talk more about that as the weeks go on when we return from Thanksgiving. But for those of you who are still sort of debating what you're going to be doing for Thanksgiving, I'm not in a position to tell people, you know, what they should do, I guess. I guess to a certain extent, I can tell you what my opinion is, which is you should not have a big Thanksgiving festival. You should not travel great distances because those great distances mean that you will be exposed or potentially exposed to other people who you do not know, who are not necessarily, you know, in your potted social circle. In the Northeast, I think this part of the country more or less is doing better than the rest, primarily because of the experience we had at the beginning of this pandemic, at least in this country, and the devastation it wrought. But here is, and you know, one of the things that's difficult about this is that, you know, occasionally you'll read here and there someone's personal experience. Occasionally here or there, you'll see a video of a nurse or a doctor talking about their experiences in hospitals that are now overrun. We're getting reports in rural areas around the country that that they're having to send patients to the cities because, well, there's just not the capacity to handle the number of patients that they have.
Right. And this was warned about months and months ago when New York City was hit the hardest at the start of the pandemic, that eventually it would spread to rural areas and they would not have the capacity to deal with the amount of patients and with the necessary resources to help them. And we're seeing that in droves right now.
It's interesting because, you know, at the time we were like, you know, you heard a lot of people talk about flatten the curve, right? And I guess maybe to some extent people became weary of that. But it is because, you know, they're talking about flattening the curve in early April and in March for New York, but the rest of the country didn't necessarily, or at least a vast majority of the country, wasn't experiencing anything like that. But you get the sense that they got weary with the idea of flatten the curve. And the idea, again, about flatten the curve is that you do not want a spike of patients because your hospital only has so much ability to deal with so many patients. There is not a lot of slack in the U.S. healthcare system at all because it's vastly about making profits and having extra capacity in the event that there's a pandemic or some type of emergency. Just simply
too
is not
overhead. Too
right.
Much.
Exactly. It's just simply not profitable. And that is one of the problems with having a for-profit system, is that it doesn't make allowances for events such as these, and why you need a healthier and more robust system of public hospitals in this country, where the idea is you get high quality care, but it is not about making a profit. And so we have this problem. The curve is not flattening in many of these places. You're starting to see some places a little bit, but remember, when we talk about hospitalizations, we're still about 2 weeks away from the numbers that we see today. And Monday is traditionally, we have Monday's numbers. Mondays are traditionally lower. But today's, or I should say on November 23rd, it was 179,000 infected, which is a 50% 14-day change. The deaths are now up 62%. It was over 1,000. That was on yesterday. Remember, Mondays also tend to be days where it's underreported. Hospitalized at 85,000. That's up 50%. I would imagine today's numbers, and I don't know if they've come out yet, will be higher, significantly higher. And
and as you mentioned, the 14-day lag for deaths, we're going to see a significant death increase 14 days from now, even, you know, 10 days from now, from when we were seeing last week those record highs, breaking records in cases, et cetera, over and over again.
When you see the hospitalizations, it's somewhere between 16, or I should say the infections, it's somewhere between 16 and 21 days is generally when you start to see the deaths come in. And it can range between 1.4 and 1.8 in terms of a death rate. And so we're not going to see the peak of this stuff for a couple of weeks. And that is presuming that we will not see a new peak because of Thanksgiving. And then that will roll into Christmas. And who knows, hopefully people will have a clearer understanding of what's going on. Like, I wonder if there isn't more travel now because people presume that by Christmas, they're not going to be able to travel, but that just exacerbates things too. I mean, I'm watching images of people in airports, crowded airport waiting areas. And it's going to be a problem. And one of the things that is difficult, like I was about to say, is because of HIPAA rules, and I'm all in favor of HIPAA rules in terms of confidentiality with people and protected people's privacy when they're sick. You know, we don't have cameras strolling through wards in hospitals. We can't do that. We shouldn't do that. But a lot of times, part of the problem with our modern era is that we don't believe things are real unless we see them on video.
Well, and we had that New York Times report earlier in the pandemic from New York where that nurse took a hidden camera in, and that was jarring because of exactly what you're saying. We don't see these kinds of images.
We don't see them. And here is a doctor from Minnesota. This was on CNN. Discussing how their healthcare system and the upper Midwest has been hit particularly hard. How their healthcare system is on the verge of just simply breaking.
I think for us as healthcare workers, when we see the numbers of the thousands of people in Minnesota that are getting tested positive every day, it's terrifying because we can find physical space. You know, we can make rooms. We have made rooms. We can get ventilators. We can get equipment, but we can't create doctors. We can't create nurses to take care of patients. We can't create respiratory therapists to manage the ventilators. And when thousands of people are getting sick, that just means there's more risk for a healthcare worker to get sick, for a healthcare worker to be exposed and then be quarantined. And I think we're all just really, really scared of what's to come because the hospitals are already full.
And understand, you know, I would imagine in places like New York City, you're going to see less cases of the flu than you typically do because people are washing their hands. They're wearing masks out in the public. They're at least, you know, to some extent, mitigating their exposure to the flu virus because they're also trying to mitigate their exposure to coronavirus. around the country, in these places where we're seeing the coronavirus surging, there's no reason to believe that they're going to have a diminished amount of flu cases. And this is part of the problem, that people didn't seem to be able to wrap their heads around, or I shouldn't say all people, some people could not seem to wrap their heads around at the beginning of this, which is we have a certain amount of capacity, slack in the system to deal with the annual flu, but we don't have any more slack after that. And so we're going to see these hospitals are overrun with a coronavirus now. It could get worse within weeks, but we will also start to see them having to deal with flu patients.
And potentially combination infections, which is indeed a whole new terrain that we're going to be dealing with in the final months of 2020 and into next year.
So folks should just be aware of the situation that you're that you could potentially be exposing yourself and others to. And you know, Thanksgiving this year is just going to be different, and I don't know, you want to say it's going to stink a little bit?
I mean, the conservatives raising hell about this and talking about how leftists hate Thanksgiving, we hate Christmas too, right? I mean, how snowflakey are you that you can't just take 1 year off from your traditional feasts and the way you celebrate just for the public good? I know that's a foreign concept, but like they're clinging to these kinds of traditions as if it's life or death, basically. But it is life or death for some
exactly.
people.
And right. It's not just for the public good. It's for the good of, because look,
your grandma, your uncle, exactly. your cousin.
Exactly. All the people.
Well, I also thought the prevalence of people knowing healthcare workers, I thought would have a greater effect, frankly. Like I have somebody in North Dakota who's had to pick up 4 night shifts because literally like, all the nurses are quarantining with COVID. And like Burgum, the governor of North Dakota, had to issue this crazy announcement a few weeks ago that really upset a lot of the hospitals, because he said, actually, you know what? Some places are letting COVID positive nurses treat COVID patients. Like that's the state of things. They brought in a whole bunch of military nurses now. But this is all really Sturgis, right? South Dakota, yeah. Nome in Sturgis. She's literally doing $1 million in advertising for tourism at this time.
Yeah, I'm getting the advertisements saying, I'm not scared of COVID, whatever. Tough lady
psycho.
She is.
Yeah. Nuts. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back, with more as we, shift from warning you about travel on Thanksgiving to giving you something to celebrate if you're staying home. And we'll be right back in just a moment with that. In the meantime, this is going to surprise you, Emma. When would you say the perfect time to plant like a tree or a shrub would be?
If I were to guess, I'd say April.
So spring.
Spring.
Yes. Wrong. Shocking. I got to say, I was surprised by this too, because I've always done it in the early spring until this year when I read coincidentally that it's fall.
Wow.
You got to get it in the ground where the ground's still soft and there's a little bit of time for the roots to establish. But that way they just get like a surge of energy in the spring. That's my understanding. Anyways, if you go to a big box store and you ask them, when's the best time to plant a tree? They're just going to look at you and go like, I don't know. but like I say, it is the fall, and when you go to plant your tree, we're in zone 5 up here, and I think you could still get a tree into the ground. The best place to go, and I've actually been buying trees there before these guys became a sponsor, just coincidentally enough, fastgrowingtrees.com. It is the world's largest online nursery. And the thing that's amazing about, first of all, I've been ordering trees through the mail for 15 years, frankly. And they show up. It's so much easier. They come intact. And at one point, I was getting bare roots, which is a disaster. You want a tree that is already established. And that's the amazing thing about fast growing trees. They don't grow. I think the dirty secret is they don't grow faster. It's just that they're bigger when they send them to you.
Right. So you don't have to wait for them to sprout up.
You don't have to wait. And they are not as fragile or not fragile. They're just not as like tentative. So the best way to grow a tree in the fall is to go over to fastgrowingtrees.com. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee, which means your plants are going to arrive happy, healthy, and ready for planting. Now through December 15th, go to fastgrowingtrees.com/majority for 10% off. That's 10% off fastgrowingtrees.com/majority. fastgrowingtrees.com/majority. My suggestion to you, if you're looking for an apple tree, go with the Arkansas Black. I know everybody's like, oh,
he's
I want the Honeycrisp. Yeah, that's all well and good. But the Arkansas Black is an apple you can keep through for months. And if you're looking for something that's like, and it's also got a very tough skin, so it's you don't have to spray it or anything like that, I would go with the Arkansas Black. And if you're looking for a nice ornamental tree, I would go with the, it is the lilac, what is it called? Bloomerang. It blooms twice. Ooh. A lilac tree that blooms twice. It's gorgeous.
Because it comes back around.
Bingo.
Wow.
There you go. Yeah. Also, during the pandemic, I discovered Literati. And if you want your kids to feel, you know, some of the fun and laughter that they've lacked in 2020, there's nothing like a subscription book club that sends children's books to your door each month, handpicked by experts, five of them. Literati Kids has book clubs for children's ages 0 to 12, and each club has age-appropriate selections tailored to what your child needs. Not only do you get these awesome books, they send like little posters and stickers and like little, you know, different types of goodies, like drawing stuff.
That's
you
fun.
Can get. Yes. No, it's been great. Gift subscriptions are available for 1, 3, 6, or 12 months of books. So if you don't know what to get your nephew or your niece or your grandkids, or frankly, your kids, or frankly, you know what? It's like, it's really sort of also a gift for the parents, to be honest with you, because it's hard to, you know, there's like, I can get like 3 or 4 books deep into like when I ask suggestions from people, but then all of a sudden people run out of books to suggest. And the great thing about Literati is that they send you these books and you get a sense of what your kid likes to read. Because they don't know. It's really just you put it in front of them. It's almost like they're like animals, like they're cats or dogs. And it's just like, you know, you can't guess what kind of food they're going to eat. You put a couple in front of them, you see which one they go to. And that's what I've found is the best thing about this. Plus, you get super excited to get a package. You can go to literati.com/majority for 25% off your first two orders. Pick your kids' book club gift today. Remember, no one else has kids' book clubs like these. Only at Literati. It is LITERATI.com/majority. You get 25% off your first two orders. Receive 5 incredible kids' books curated by experts delivered to your door every month. That's Literati.com/majority. Make your little one's holiday season unforgettable this year. So check it out. Also, don't forget, this program relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, we have merch. People can check this out at shop.majorityreportradio.com. So, Emma, I know you're looking to get your parents all sorts of gifts. We've got
you can get coffee mugs like the one I'm drinking out of right now.
You can get coffee mugs. You can get carpenter pencils and hoodies and hats and shirts. So check that out. If folks will enjoy it. And you can also gift, if you go to jointhemajorityreport.com, you can also gift a membership if you're interested. All right. So let's dig into what is, you know, the idea of like, you know, well, listen, I don't think there's any reason not to, frankly, to celebrate at least briefly before we get to work, because I don't want people to go to sleep.
Right.
There's a lot of things from a progressive standpoint. And, you know, frankly, just broadly speaking, one of the problems we have in this country, to my mind, is that we have people who get completely wrapped up and invested in an election. If the Democrat wins, they go to sleep 3 or 4 years or 2 years, and they wake up and they go, hey, what happened? Folks need to engage in this stuff. But before we do, let's enjoy ourselves.
Let's dance on Trump's grave.
Exactly. And
rhetorically,
of course. It's going to be, we got to find out who knows what could happen in the future. And I'm not excluding any dancing happening, but I'm just saying right now, he's not actually dead. It's just his presidency is. And here is Laura Ingraham. And this is, this is sort of fascinating to watch the pivots here, right?
Right.
Because they are telling their audience, after giving them all of this sort of like false hope, and creating this narrative that, well, it's actually over. And just remember, I never gave you any false hope.
Yeah.
Here's Laura Ingraham delivering that message. Like, I'm hoping that you didn't DVR any of my shows from like 3 weeks ago.
Actually, I was right all along, and your dreams are dashed. Bye.
Bye.
What's next? That's the focus of tonight's angle. In what was perhaps the most consequential tweet sent since Election Day, President Trump gave the go-ahead for the transition. You see it there. And as unpleasant and disappointing as these past 3 weeks have been to so many of us, as much as we wish things were different, this is where things stand tonight. Now, legal challenges continue in a number of states. Serious questions about vote counting, poll watcher access are outstanding.
But unless
the legal situation changes in a dramatic and, frankly, an unlikely manner, Joe Biden will be inaugurated on January 20th. Now, to say this does not mean I don't think that this election was rife with problems and potential fraud. And to say this does not constitute being a sellout to the conservative populist movement that I've been fighting for, I don't know, 25 years.
Hold
on. Yeah. One, I want to make sure you don't call me a sellout. So I'm going to say I'm not a sellout, which completely means that you can't say it, doesn't count. No. I'm not a sellout, even though all the Trump supporters are going to say that stuff about Fox News. Go to OANN for a little bit, then come
back.
We
will get to that in a moment. But yes, it is an age-old strategy. You build the critique into the presentation. And here she is making it clear and using these sort of like weasel words, like potential for fraud. Well, I mean, like, let's be honest. There's always potential for fraud. Although we have had really the instances of fraud in this country on elections have been, well, I mean, you could go back into the 60s. I mean, you could talk about, sort of like what happened in Chicago and over the years, I'm sure there has been fraud. But on a national level, very difficult to establish that there has been a widespread fraud there. I think there is, an argument about electronic voting, at least in terms of it being obscured. But the idea of potential fraud, you're 3 weeks into it. You've supposedly deployed all the investigations. If you didn't find fraud, maybe there's no fraud. But let's continue.
Conservative populist movement that I've been fighting for, I don't know, 25 years. And it does not mean that I disagree at all with the president's right and obligation to pursue all legitimate legal challenges to this outcome. To say this constitutes living in reality. And if I offered you a false reality, if I told you that there was an excellent, phenomenal chance that the Supreme Court was going to step in and deliver a victory to President Trump, I'd be lying to you. Now, you've known me for a long time now, and you know me long enough to know that I will not lie to you or simply tell you what you want to hear. But what I will tell you tonight is that even amidst an election loss, there is an enormous amount for us to be hopeful about, even optimistic. And how things are handled going forward is going to have a huge impact on the Republicans' ability to stop Biden's most egregious moves, and thus, these next moves are critical to the future of the country. And thanks to President Trump, we have seen the amazing results that are possible with his America First agenda. Middle income, blue collar workers saw unprecedented wage gains. The Middle East historic peace deals nobody thought was possible.
What?
Of course, we saw China finally put back on.
Yeah.
Oh, what's she going on?
Yeah.
She pivoted quite quickly. Now, how many seconds, Brendan, was it before they started calling her a sellout on Parler?
I don't know. I'm not checking Parler.
I imagine it's happened quite quickly, right?
Well,
I
mean, right, but she's the representative of the conservative populist movement, as she has been for 25 years, you know.
The moment she got out of Dartmouth.
Right.
Her and Dinesh,
right.
Yeah.
Her, Dinesh, Ted Cruz, you know, all these duck hunting, Steve Bannon hanging out with, complete, you know, whiskey shotgunning conservative populists. That's what I think of.
And there it is. Laura Ingraham does the big pivot. She lets them down easy and tells them, don't worry, it's been a success. And hopefully she'll be able to come back on her show tonight and just pretend like none of that ever happened and just sort of ease right into calling Joe Biden a communist and talk about, you know, the
China
problems. Yes, of course.
And there's going to be so much China talk, and it's I can't imagine that outside of their specific bubble it's going to have much weight. Like, as we're in an economic depression and hundreds of thousands of Americans are going to die of coronavirus, do you think anyone's really that obsessed over China outside people already voting for Republicans?
No.
We'll see.
What's going to be interesting to me is how are they going to deal with the coronavirus, right? Like, because they've already set up this premise that, and I imagine their viewers have forgotten it, that it was going to go away the day after the election because, of course, it was, you know, completely fraudulent. But at the same time, it's quite possible that by early and late spring, we're going to have vaccinations that are basically going to begin the process of people being able to live their life normally without concern about catching things, where people are going to go be able to go visit their folks in nursing homes, but you know, where you know, you're going to be able to, maybe they'll require you, you know, to have a vaccine if you go, you know, send your kids to you know, like a daycare or whatever it is. And the question is like, how much are they going to pivot to Donald? This is the Trump vaccine, which they'll probably call it, but also just the fact that that things could be getting better at that point. Like, you know what, like it's going to be interesting to see how they
might
deal.
Say like, as it gets better, well, it could have been this way all along if it weren't for the Democratic hand wringing. You know, like of course now things are getting better now that the Democrats in charge and they want you to think that everything's hunky dory.
Or you know, I wonder if some of them aren't going to go to like full on, no vax, anti-vaxxing. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they get away with that on Fox. I imagine we'd hear more of that from Owen. So there's Laura Ingraham's pivot. Here is Tucker Carlson's pivot, which is really no pivot at all. Although it is a pivot, you'll recall that just days ago, he was attacking Sidney Powell.
Who's not a Trump attorney, by the way. Never
who
was.
Apparently
just stumbled onto the stage and spoke for the Trump team alongside Rudy Giuliani on multiple occasions, but not on the Trump team.
Not on the Trump team. And he had, and it's curious. I wonder if he was part of the catalyst for her being jettisoned, or was aware that she was about to be jettisoned and was sort of, you know, loosening the soil as it were. But he was saying like, she won't come on the show with evidence, so we're not going to let her on. Like, you can't just come on and make assertions about how the software was rigged without evidence. That is absolutely unacceptable at all for anybody to come on the Tucker Carlson and make those assertions without evidence. Only Tucker can do that.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. You've heard a lot over the past few days about the security of our electronic voting machines. And this is a real issue, no matter who raises it or who tries to dismiss it out of hand as a conspiracy theory. Electronic voting is not as secure as traditional hand counting. period. It never will be as secure. Voters can see this because it's obvious and it makes them nervous. And why wouldn't it make them nervous? Our leaders have given us every reason not to trust technology. The people now telling us to stop asking questions about voting machines are the same ones who claimed that our phones weren't listening to us. They lie. We all
pause
know that.
Pause it for 1 second. Pause
Other
it.
Countries
pause
understand it.
It. Who are these people? Who are these people who are saying, don't ask questions about electronic vote? Who are these people?
There's none.
And they were telling you that the phones weren't listening to, like, there is some shadowy cabal that he doesn't define that is doing this stuff. And it's a they or them and these people. Like, I don't know who these people are. And I think that's part of the point.
Likely the globalists. I mean, the left is the one. The Democrats are the party that want to implement paper ballots, not on a national level, but the only real initiatives that I've seen on state levels have come from the Democratic Party. So another false premise that he's just setting up so he can knock down that straw man.
Let's hear more.
Machines are the same ones who claimed that our phones weren't listening to us. They lie. We all know that. Other countries understand that they don't use electronic voting because they know it undermines confidence in democracy. A system cannot function if no one trusts the vote. And that's true here, too, as we're finding out. Going forward, we need to find out exactly what happened in this month's presidential election. We need to find out no matter how long it takes the investigation to unfold or how much it costs. And once we get answers from that investigation, we all revert immediately to...
Pause it. What investigation? Is there an investigation going on? Is Rudy Giuliani doing an investigation? Is that what's happening? Or is Sidney Powell doing this? Like, who's doing an investigation?
I guess the Tucker Carlson program, but not with the evidence provided by Sidney Powell. Because it turns out he wasn't opposed to the Trump administration pushing forward these conspiracy theories about fake votes and election fraud. He's fine to do it himself. He was just mad that Sidney Powell didn't come on his show. So that's the ego of Tucker Carlson. And like so many silly people got duped into giving him credit for that segment like two nights ago.
Of course. Of course. But as far as I know, there's no investigation now. I suppose the Mitch McConnell's in charge, has control of the Senate. He could launch an investigation right now into, and I would love to see some type of legislation that comes out of this that standardizes voting across the country, that makes voting a right. You don't have a right to vote, at least a federal right to vote. And therefore, it becomes very difficult to do things like standardize it and protect it because it is not a right. Let's continue.
The investigation to unfold or how much it costs. And once we get answers from that investigation, we ought to revert immediately to the traditional system of voting, the one that served our democracy for hundreds of years. What we're doing now is not working. That's an understatement. As of tonight, the state of New York still hasn't managed to count the votes in 5 House races, thanks to mail-in voting. That's a disaster. Let's stop pretending that it's not. But at the same time, we shouldn't let our focus on voting machines.
Why is it a disaster? Why is it a disaster? I mean, it would be nice if they counted them as they came in and we had standardized mail-in voting, because we don't see these problems in states that have, switched over to all mail-in ballots. But why is it a disaster? We don't know who these Congress people are. They haven't seated yet. I mean, we waited until I think it was June in 2008 to seat Al Franken as a senator from Minnesota. I don't recall anybody on the right saying this is a disaster that we're waiting on this race between Norm Coleman and Al Franken. It's weird. It's just we're supposed to take that it's just a disaster.
Right. And didn't Tucker Carlson and the entire Fox News apparatus or the opinion section bemoan the fact that the election was called on the Friday after the election? So if it's such a disaster that they're still waiting to, certify the results, like, shouldn't you be on the side of the news media that decided to make a decisive action and say Joe Biden won the election? But no, it's a disaster that they're still counting votes.
It's a disaster. Continue.
Thanks to mail-in voting. That's a disaster. Let's stop pretending that it's not. But at the same time, we shouldn't let our focus on voting machines distract us from all that happened earlier this month. The 2020 presidential election was not fair. No honest person would claim that it was fair.
I'm honest.
On many levels, the system was rigged against one candidate and in favor of another.
What?
And it was rigged in ways that were not hidden from view. We all saw it happen. The media openly colluded with the Democratic nominees.
Openly colluded.
Joe Biden and Kamala Harris refused to explain what they would do if they were elected.
Hmm.
That's never happened before in any presidential election in American history.
Oh, my God.
But the media allowed them to do it. At the same time, beginning in the spring, Democrats used our public health emergency for nakedly partisan ends.
Huh.
They punished Trump supporters for trying to gather, but they exempted their own activists, rioters and vandals from BLM and Antifa, from the COVID lockdowns entirely.
Okay, pause it. I'm sorry. So he transitions from saying that it was rigged in favor. The election was unfair and rigged in favor of the Democrats. His reasoning, Black Lives Matter protests and Antifa. How does that relate to vote totals? How does that relate to the way that Americans' votes were tabulated? I don't know. I mean, he was trying to claim that it was unfair because the media was more on Biden and Kamala Harris's side. Whoop-de-doo, that has nothing to do with how votes are totaled. I mean, like, the way he just seems
to be honest,
from those baseless claims is unbelievable.
We have never, ever fully vetted Joe Biden's relationship with Reverend Wright or with the Weather Underground.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we need to hear more about Hunter Biden's laptop.
What's going on with Bill Ayers? We never fully vetted Barack Obama and Bill Ayers, and so we have never really fully vetted Joe Biden.
Or his plagiarism.
Obama.
Remember that from the 80s? I don't know.
That never came up. Let's hear again from Tucker Carlson. Let him finish this out.
Vandals from BLM and Antifa from the COVID lockdowns entirely. They said this out loud. The restrictions they did enforce crushed America's small businesses, the heart of the Republican Party. And yet they made their own donors fantastically richer. Jeff Bezos alone saw his net worth jump by more than $70 billion during the pandemic. Then Democrats used the coronavirus to change our system of voting. They vastly increased the number of mail-in ballots.
Who was president?
Because they knew their candidates would benefit from less secure voting. And they were right.
God.
They used the courts to neutralize the Republican Party's single most effective get-out-the-vote operation, which for generations had been the National Rifle Association. Not enough has been written about this, but anyone on the ground saw it. Thanks to legal harassment from the left, the NRA played a vastly reduced role in this election, and that made a huge difference in swing states like Pennsylvania and others. But above all, Democrats harnessed the power of big tech to win this election. Virtually all news and all information in the English-speaking world travels through a single company, Google. A huge percentage of our political debates take place on Facebook and Twitter. If you use technology to censor the ideas that people are allowed to express online, ultimately you control how the population votes. And that's
exactly what they did. Except that that's just not based in any reality, because if you look at empirical studies of data that's shared online and Facebook and things like that, it leans so far right, it's just completely disconnected. Like, he's just—
are you suggesting that Dan Bongino shouldn't be the top shared source of news on Facebook in like 12 out of 20 slots 3 weeks in a row?
Ben Shapiro is consistently one of the top most shared Facebook. Like, he's just taking these niche issues that he cares about and thinks pushes some specific buttons, and then pretends like that's what influenced the election. Like, this isn't just a laundry list of things that piss you off, Tucker. We have to base these things in reality about what translates to vote totals.
Well, I think they're also larger than just Tucker Carlson. I mean, I think these are the themes that the Republicans are pushing and have been pushing for quite a while. I mean, one of the interesting things I've been I think it was Ryan Grimm tweeted out that on Twitter, Mike Lee, Senator Mike Lee from Utah, is, you know, talking about freedom and, you know, occasionally saying democracy is bad and whatnot. But more or less, you know, sort of libertarian views that he's putting out there that aren't necessarily directly related to the news of the day. On Parler, however, where he's talking solely to conservatives, he's basically saying that the election has been stolen. Right. And so the idea that first off, the only things that were censored were like demonstrably untrue things, false, fictionalized fake news, which Donald Trump has been complaining about for years. But this is going to be the cri de coeur, as it were, of conservatives for the years coming by. It's going to be and there is an opportunity for people to address these problems. I mean, one of the things that and we're going to get to, we'll take a moment here and take a break in just a sec. But there's going to be a push to roll back Section 230 of the Digital Millennium Act, which protects places like YouTube and Facebook and basically online technology companies that from liability for what other people post as opposed to what they post, because they suggest that they're not publishers. There's another way to deal with this problem rather than getting in there and deciding who can and cannot censor and what liability people have and, what liability companies that set up platforms have for the people who put the content in there. And that is make them smaller, make them have competitors.
Break them
people
up.
Want to go to Parler and people go to Twitter, and there's not one that becomes like, you know, an essential utility.
I have a Parler note, by the way. Some breaking news from William Legate, who tried to post the hashtag write in Trump for GA on Parler, and Parler is censoring that hashtag.
What?
So
whoa.
Seems kind of like partisan brainwashing to me, but
seems
well,
like
yeah,
some
Parler
big tech.
Makes a big issue of that. And I've heard Roger Stone is threatening to revive his PAC to have a similar act in Georgia. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the Biden appointments to his cabinet. Right back. We're back. Quickly, just on the non-national security front, Janet Yellen was announced as Biden's pick for Treasury Secretary. She was a former chair of the Federal Reserve Bank. She was also the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. She was an economic advisor to Bill Clinton. When she was just a member of the Fed, she was a bit of a dove, which is a good thing as far as I'm concerned, where the idea being that we're not too worried about inflation and we can increase employment. And at one point, there was a broader understanding that 5% was not the smallest amount of unemployment that you can sustain without having runaway inflation.
Right.
A lot of precepts of monetary policy have been, I wouldn't say shattered, but are like cracking and crumbling. When she became Fed chair, she was a little bit more hawkish, as it were. And people discredit
pro austerity comments in the past that I think people are pointing to now. But more recently, she'd walked that back and discussed how currently, based on our economic climate and in recent years, that she's much less concerned about inflation deficit.
Yes.
Than she had been in the past.
In 2015, she raised rates a little bit, which contracted the economy or at least slowed it. And some people suggest that maybe Hillary Clinton would have won had that tightening not happened. But it does feel like she is on some level, a lot of these people feel like Joe Biden, which is they have deep establishment roots. They have conventional wisdom thinking that has gone unchanged up until really the past 4 or 5 years. And they are not hostile to arguments from the left. That's like, if I was to so far with all the picks, I would say that is sort of the broad stroke version of that. But there are problems with some of those folks. Also, just add, John Kerry named the climate czar. He's the one who got us in the Paris Accords. You'll recall he also will be sitting on the National Security Council, which
is a new position, which is excellent.
It shows that there's a level of seriousness about climate change. I suspect that if Joe Biden has the ability to pass things through the Senate, that a climate bill will be one of the first things that they expend a lot of their political capital on. On the national security front, Emma, tell us what you can.
Yeah.
To the extent that we know about, Department of Homeland Security Secretary and Secretary of State at this point. Tell us a little bit about those people. And then, of course, we also have DNI. So,
yeah. So, I mean, let's start there with Avril Haines, the pick for DNI, Director of National Intelligence, because I think that's probably the most problematic of all of the Biden picks thus far. I mean, Larry Summers could have been the Treasury Secretary, so I'm fairly happy with Yellen in terms of just the scope of who Biden was going to pick. But Avril Haines, I think, of those announced thus far, is the most problematic based on her direct involvement with Obama's drone war program. I read the Washington Post article on it, which just discussed how later in Obama's presidency, she was involved in creating some sort of stopgap or some program in order to limit civilian casualties. The Post conveniently left out the fact that she was heavily involved in creating
establishing
many of those civilian casualties and the programs that led up to that during her time at the CIA. And also, she helped shield the CIA officers who were caught basically spying on the Senate Senate Intelligence Committee the Senate investigation into CIA torture. She backed them and she vouched for their illegal interference in the Senate investigation into themselves. So she is being talked about in the media as the first woman in this position. The reality is that she's close with Gina Haspel. She's been a part of national security establishment for a long time and not in good ways. She was supportive of and pushed Obama to intervene in Libya. We're seeing this also with Tony Blinken. Biden was not in favor of intervening in Libya, but the two people right now that he's picked for his national security establishment or national security picks were. So that's concerning to me, but I think Haines is definitely, of the people he's picked, the one that progressives should be most concerned about as of right now.
Yeah, and she also consulted with Palantir, which has been involved in all sorts of privacy issues and spying on on the left and literally spying on the left in this country. Highly problematic. Linda Thomas Greenfield, as UN ambassador, she is a longtime career diplomat. She was purged by Tillerson in 2017 when he decided he didn't need anybody who knew about diplomacy.
Yeah.
She had been ambassador to Liberia, and she was assistant secretary of state for Africa during the Obama administration. So people tend to think that she's a fairly good pick.
Alejandro Mayorkas for Homeland Security Secretary, who was responsible for coming up with DACA under the Obama administration. So that's, a decent pick, but again, another kind of fungible Biden establishment Democratic standard pick there. Too.
Yes, he had some problems with the EB-5 visa program that he was kowtowing a little bit to outside interests, according to the inspector general, or outside stakeholders. But that scandal really never took off, as it were. We will talk more about Blinken as we go on, but we need to wrap things up here. Blinken, by all accounts, is an establishment guy who was a staffer who made some big, big mistakes, I think, in the Middle East, but supposedly has come around to thinking about it. Biden is already committed to at least reducing, if not shutting down, the drone program as it stands now. We shall see. But progressive foreign policy folks seem to think that there's going to be an opportunity for progressives to get to the table. But we will talk more about this and on tomorrow's program. Until then, bye-bye. And for those of you sticking around for the fun half, as we sign off to our listeners on, or I should say our viewers on Peacock, folks, you can also check out the show on the Peacock app. You can find it on the Choice channel. You can just search for the Majority Report on your Peacock app. Apparently, it's not available yet in Canada. I've been asked to, yes, by a Canadian listener of the program who searched for it, could not find it in Canada. So sorry about that. We're going to have a show tomorrow. Alex Perrin will be joining us. And then we're going to be taking Thursday and Friday off this week, and we're going to head into the fun half of the program. Nomi will be joining us. Is she around? Should we bring her on? Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. You get 10% off. Check out our merch, holiday shopping. Nomi's show is on right after this one at 3 p.m. You can find it at youtube.com/TheNomiKeyShow or patreon.com/TheNomiKeyShow. In fact, here she is to tell you exactly who will be on that program. If you will, please.
Drum roll.
Well, just a reminder also, you can find The Antifada at patreon.com/TheAntifada. Jamie's got all sorts of new programming this week. And here is Nomi.
Hi.
Hi. So who's going to be on your program today?
We have Joshua Cotton Russell, Chris Halali for a panel to talk about Trump's legacy and how much of it's going to be like infused into the Biden administration, whether we're conscious of it or not. And we have Josh Fox on to talk about John Kerry's as the climate envoy. So pretty standard left.
I think
show.
You'll find he's the climate czar, not envoy.
But I think it is envoy. I hate to
is
correct you, Sam. I think it's envoy. Yes.
Oh man, is
who
that because
better as a messenger?
Are they afraid of using czar because yes. They took so much grief about it under the Obama administration?
Because obviously they're communists, so you don't want czar Russia.
But didn't,
any
didn't
association.
Trump appoint a couple of czars too?
Yeah, but it doesn't count for them.
Well, technically, czar is not communist, so you know.
Right, but are you telling me Fox News audience knows the difference?
I thought they were more Russian friendly now.
Who, Trump or Biden?
I don't remember the Trump people. I guess they want to stay away. Oh, God, so stupid. All right. Well, that sounds like a fun show. Matt, what's happening tonight on TMBS?
Tonight on TMBS, the Michael Brooks Show YouTube page will be at normal time at 7 p.m. where David and I will have an announcement about the future. And so I'm excited about it. So, tune in tonight, folks.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half, 646-257-3920. Nomi, we're going to be talking a little bit about the New York State Senate and House, right? Veto-proof majority?
Yes. We'll talk about it when we get back.
All right, we'll also talk about some of Biden's appointments. We'll be right back after this. Is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
You think I might be a Nazi?
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.